In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. The psychic war between men and women in the United States had taken on new dimensions since the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. The fallout from Hillary Clinton losing her bid for president of the United States has manifested into what some describe as an irrational animus fomented by institutions to divide women and men. It's true that gender polarity has been exploited by social institutions through history. However, this divide and conquer strategy along gender lines in this country, brought on by various elements during the 2016 presidential campaign, I suspect continues to be a corrosive element. Multiple news reports spoke of gender divisions manifesting within households between Hillary supporters and non-Hillary supporters, couples and family members refusing to talk to one another, shouting matches, and so on. In some severe cases, if you didn't support either candidate, that was considered a vote for Donald Trump. To have a woman president for the first time in the United States in the minds of some supporters eclipsed Clinton's known political history of corruption and ethical breaches, to put it mildly. Intelligent, politically aware women were supporting Hillary Clinton because she was female. It seemed more about a woman president getting into the White House to some supporters at all costs, which I suspect include this inevitable division between men and women. In the Jungian archetype, this could be seen as a masculine shadow projected by the female collective. In the book, How I Lost, by Hillary Clinton, published by Orr Books, there's a list of 91 paid speaking events where Hillary Clinton collected an average of $235,000 for each presentation. It's more than $21 million in speaking fees. This was from April 2013 to March 2015. 3 weeks after delivering the last speech, she announced her second bid for presidency. Among the speaking fee contributors are Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. They have ties to Keystone Pipeline, Deutsche Bank, eBay, Canada 2020. They have ties to Keystone Pipeline, Biotechnology Industry Organization, Commercial Real Estate Women Network, Xerox Corporation, the Vancouver Board of Trade. They have ties to Keystone Pipeline, A&E Television, London Drugs, Verizon Corporation, UBS Wealth Management, and several Goldman Sachs events. There are 91 of these, so the list goes on. The first thing you need to know about Goldman Sachs is that it's everywhere, wrote journalist Matt Taibbi. The world's most powerful investment bank is a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. Highly successful figures in this corrupt system refuse to acknowledge links between their good fortunes and widespread impoverishment. Wealth is purposely transferred to the few by shipping jobs overseas, hiding untaxed profits in offshore havens, growing an informal adjunct freelance independent contractor employee base without paying benefits, getting huge tax breaks. That list goes on too. Goldman Sachs' attitude toward the general public was revealed when it knowingly sold junk dressed up as legitimate investments, and then when its price collapsed, threatening the entire financial system, it placed the blame on the gullible people, admitting no guilt themselves. I want to insert a disclaimer in that I'm not saying that President Donald Trump's career is without corruption. Hillary Clinton was mentioned in Fortune magazine last week. Quote, Hillary Clinton spoke about her thoughts on what she viewed as sexist comments by President Donald Trump and women who continued to support him. Quote, this is Hillary speaking. When I see women doing that, I think, why are they publicly disrespecting themselves? Why are they opening the door to have someone say that about them in their workplace, in a community setting? Do they not see the connection there? Clinton said in an interview on AM Joy. Again, by criticizing Clinton's statements in this context, I'm not condoning sexist behavior, but you have to ask yourself, why is she doing this now? Is it because she's trying to deflect attention away from the Anthony Weiner scandal, who just got sentenced for sexting a 15-year-old girl? The Pizzagate investigations, the Awan brothers, Seth Rich, John Podesta, the Clinton Foundation, that's raised more than $2 billion, mostly from Wall Street. I'm pointing out here how Hillary Clinton is using an opportunity to foment divisions between men and women. Listeners, she's a member of the elite class who says very different things in public than in the private sector. And it's proven through history that gender polarity is one of the easiest areas to exploit. The subsequent corrosive effects of political correctness taken too far in our culture is harming free speech. It's killing comedy. And in academics, could be allowing false information and research to pervade. Christina Hoff Sommers addresses this. She's a former philosophy professor who taught ethics and probably best known for her critique of late 20th century feminism. She wrote the book The War Against Boys: How Misguided Feminism is Harming Our Young Men. It was published in 2000, and it tells the story of how a pathology of aggression and violence was attributed to millions of healthy male children in the United States. At the same time, however, Sommers points out how girl crisis advocates were awarded millions of dollars in grants to study the plight of girls. And what's troubling is that some of the studies were exposed as being statistically false, yet were adopted by the U.S. Department of Education to set policy standard, the results of which have been implemented as behavioral modules inside the classroom, as the projected image of males are viewed as predators and females as hapless victims. Let's listen now to a short piece of a past interview with Christina Hoff Sommers. Call it a war against boys, and continue to say that the first casualty of war is truth. In the U.S., the truth about boys has been both distorted and buried. How did the plight of boys get to be buried, and by whom?
Unfortunately, what we have in the United States, and there's a good reason for this, but it's really unfortunate. There are hundreds, dare I say thousands, of women's groups looking out for the interests of women and girls. How many organizations are there for men and boys? Very few, almost none, and they risk being called men's rights activists or something, and it's a bad thing, according to critics. So anybody that's working for boys is immediately under suspicion that they're trying to undermine girls. The message of my book, which I wrote a new edition, I rewrote large parts of it and updated it 2 years ago, mm-hmm. And my message is that you don't take away from girls if you help boys. The rise of women doesn't depend on the downfall of men. We're in this together. If boys are in trouble, so are we all. You can't say that if one sex is at risk, then, oh, the other's fine. No, they're both in trouble. The boys are the young men with whom our daughters are going to build a future. So you have to be concerned with how boys are doing. Now, right now, we see every year fewer boys than the proportion of boys going to college is dropping. And girls, it started in the 80s, there used to be fewer girls than boys in college, and that changed in the 1980s, and the girls never looked back. They're on an upward trajectory. And you need education beyond high school in an information economy. And increasingly, girls are getting it, boys are not.
Well, can you talk then about how the distorted research by some of the girl advocate groups hurt women as well as men?
Well, if you go back to the 1990s, there were a series of girl crisis books. There was a study by the American Association of University Women which claimed that girls have lost their self-esteem. Adolescent girls have lost their sense of self. There was Reviving Ophelia, and the Sadkers had a book, Peggy Orenstein had a book, all about how girls are being undermined and held back by our society. They were writing these books at a time, and as a philosophy professor for many years, I would see these girls in my classes. I was at a liberal arts college, Clark University, and I would see more and more girls in this college and fewer boys. That was happening nationwide. So while girls were winning all the prizes, much more likely to be valedictorian in the honor society, going to college, as I said, all these good things were happening. At that time, we got all these girl crisis books that said, oh, no, girls are in free fall. They're in a sort of psychological Bermuda Triangle, according to Mary Piper, Reviving Ophelia author. And the assumption was that they were favored, the classroom's favored boys who dominated discussions. Well, it turned out I looked for that research that claimed that boys dominate the discussion. There was a showcase factoid used by the Girl Crisis authors. The Sadkers said that when girls call out answers, they get reprimanded. When boys do it, they're praised and encouraged, and that boys do it 8 times more than girls. I could never, several people have tried to find this study. It doesn't, it's never been published. It doesn't seem to exist. Then they changed the numbers. It was all hocus pocus. It was like a lot of this research. I'm sorry to say, the American Association of University Women, they've done a lot of good work, so I hate to criticize them, but when it came to the girl crisis, they lowered their standards. They were carried away with this narrative of short-changed, diminished girls. You know, they wouldn't listen to reason.
What was this publicly brought to them, that some of the information was, you know, difficult to find or non-existent?
Yes. I mean, they broadcast the self-esteem study, and I did a careful evaluation, and others, not just me, Judith Kleinfeld, a psychologist at the University of Alaska, and several journalists, and even Diane Ravitch pointed these things out, and they just dug in their heels and called us, what was the word they used? They called us not only backlashers, but gender bias deniers. And all they did was call names, and they were very angry to be criticized. And I think they just didn't realize how weak the research was and how this was taking attention away from kids. Teachers should be focused on the needs of kids, girls and boys. But what they did was the schools of education followed, and even today, most of the focus is on the needs of girls when girls are approaching 60% of college students.
For the girl advocate groups, they may have accomplished what they set out to do. However, when you go to fix a problem with a bad solution, sometimes it could do more damage. And someone could argue that this is a bad solution with falsified statistics, that this data is being implemented in classrooms and affecting not only young men, but young women. Do you see young women being negatively affected by some of this falsified data?
Yes, because I think it helped to fortify this narrative of girls are shortchanged, living in a state of siege, undermined by society. The exact opposite was true. There's never been a time where it was better to be a young woman in the United States. They greatly exaggerated the risks. So we have vast numbers of young women in our colleges today who were recipients of this self-esteem training and this sort of victim feminism, and they've come to college. And you may have heard of trigger warnings and the young women demanding safe spaces and monitoring microaggressions, and they have this kind of paranoid attitude towards reality. Well, that was nourished by this alleged crisis of girlhood. So now we do have, you know, young Ophelias in our best colleges who think that they are victims. And, you know, if you tell them otherwise, they get angry, which I did. I lectured at colleges like Georgetown and Oberlin, and this happened at Yale. I would tell them that, you know, a lot of these statistics were false, not only the ones about the girl crisis, but a lot of the victim statistics surrounding gender issues. And they got very angry and organized a safe room where they could flee because someone challenging their views they thought was, you know, would cause PTSD, would induce a mental health breakdown. So I think this all came of that sort of the psychobabble and the false politics of the girl crisis.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it? I didn't realize that the falsified research data Dr. Summers references was the origin of trigger warnings and safe spaces. The trigger warning safe space, as you know, is the catalyst for normalizing censorship of speech. And that's a strange twist of irony there. As you know, the Berkeley campus is just on fire. In the resistance to have speakers such as Milo Yiannopoulos and Ben Shapiro speak at that campus. But I want to continue talking about some of the issues between men and women. In the book Psychic War in Men and Women, author Helen Block Lewis elaborates on how society implicitly fosters exploitive behavior as the means to, quote, success. This exploitation, she writes, injures the two sexes differently. So this is actually similar to what Christina Summers summarized. She writes, this is Helen Block Lewis, "It's a fair estimate that 100 million people have been killed by war since 1900. Responsibility for this mass slaughter rests directly upon the male members of the species. Homo sapiens, since it is men, not women, who have started wars, and mostly men, not women, who wage wars. This is true in developed civilizations and in primitive cultures. It is a striking universal difference in the behavior of the sexes. No observation about a sex difference in behavior is so indisputable except the equally clear fact that women, not men, are genetically equipped to bear and suckle children. Of course, these two strikingly different behaviors that men, not women, wage war and women, not men, bear children have different roots. That men wage war while women do not is a cultural phenomenon. No known genetic program dictates the absence of warfare by females. In contrast, a genetic factor dictates childbearing and nursing in women, not men. Warfare, moreover, unlike childbearing, has no clear similar forerunners in infrahuman species. All infrahuman primates and other animals, both males and females, kill other animals. Both infrahuman species kill either directly for food or in direct defense against death or against invasion of territory. The human male, alone among animals, slaughters masses of its own species without the direct motivation of hunger or individual personal danger to his life." Going out on a limb here, I might argue with that statement in that the decisions for war come from high up, and some of those individuals may not be completely human. She continues, "In modern times, the actual slaughter of masses of humanity is lawfully accomplished by a few men and in an impersonal way, by pressing buttons which release bombs or missiles of tremendous destructive power. nothing like the impersonal destruction, and for such an abstract reason, such as, quote, honor, can be found as a pattern of killing among infra-human species. In contrast, clear forerunners of the female maternal pattern of hosting life to be found genetically based among infra-human species. There is a controversy within the feminist movement about whether male domination is the chief evil for women. Some radical feminists argue that it is, while other feminists believe that exploitative social institutions push people of either sex into dominating others. In this view, women would be no better off if the handful of exploiters in the world were all women. The majority of women, as well as men, would still be oppressed. The fact that men are more often exploiters than women does not warrant an indictment of maleness. Instead, an indictment of exploitive social institutions. And this leads back to Pizzagate in terms of institutions fomenting gender divisions. Hillary Clinton kind of plays the hapless victim. In a recent interview with Anderson Cooper, Hillary Clinton mentions how the Podesta emails in Pizzagate cost her votes that helped her lose the election. I'm going to read an excerpt from the interview transcript. Anderson Cooper had already asked a question here, and he says, "Look, I don't know. We don't know." This is Clinton speaking. "We don't have all the facts in. What I believe we now know, they paid for Facebook ads and those were disseminated broadly. We know that they had access to targeting and data information from somewhere, maybe internally, maybe help externally. We know that they had Russians pretending to be Americans who were online and in person trying to foment negative stories about me and positive ones about Trump. We know there was a huge amount of content being produced in places like Macedonia. We know that WikiLeaks, which is basically a front now for Putin, was more than willing to publish stolen emails from the DNC, from John Podesta, and that those emails were weaponized with ridiculous, absurd, untrue stories being churned out on and on. So there's a lot we know already." Cooper: "You followed this extremely closely?" Clinton: Well, I started following this back in summer of 2016 because there was something going on when the DNC hack happened. You know, we had a huge political crisis when Republicans physically broke into the Democratic Party's records back in the so-called Watergate years. This is a different kind of theft. And Cooper interrupts, "Do you think this is bigger than Watergate?" "I think it's probably big," Clinton says. "I think it's bigger, probably bigger than Watergate because it's about the future. You know, we no longer are worried about, you know, spies and provocateurs, you know, dressed in black with gloves, breaking into an office and stealing information." I might pause there and say, why wouldn't you still be worried about that? That's still very real. Anyway, they do it sitting down in offices, she says, of the Russian, you know, military intelligence and other related venues, and they get into what is the core of our life now through the computer networks. Can't argue with that one. Cooper: "Well, as you know, the Republicans will say no vote was ever changed. This did not affect the outcome of the election." Clinton: "Well, I would say two things. This was a highly sophisticated influence operation. I believe it did affect people's votes." "Do you think it cost you votes?" "I think it cost me votes," she says. "The fact that those emails were," she interrupts, "well, that they were weaponized." That's an interesting choice of words there. She doesn't elaborate on the definition and context. So in the book, I write about how if you go look at Google searches, particularly in the battleground states during October, and you listen to Trump's speeches where he mentioned WikiLeaks, I think 160 times, they clearly knew that stories that were making stuff up, trying to use emails, were permeating Facebook and other sites. The worst of them was the Pizzagate story, where, honest to goodness, out of the whole cloth made up, they took the word pizza out of the John Podesta's emails and said that he and I were running a child trafficking ring in poor little pizza parlor in Washington. It sounds absurd. Millions of people were exposed to that. You see where this is going, listeners? "The horrible hit job," she continues, "total lies about the Clinton Foundation. People were affected by that because we could see that WikiLeaks searches in a lot of places that were historically kind of swing counties were really rising. I think the influence did affect individual voters. What we don't know yet, and we're only beginning to get evidence of, is why were the Russians intruding into our voter registration rolls?" Excuse me. I don't know if where the evidence is of that at this point. We're not, this is deep state material. But you think, Cooper says, but you think this Russian interference was not enough to have cost you the election if Director Comey hadn't reopened that investigation? Well, that's what I believe, she says. I believe, though, it became a perfect storm, reopening it because people once again became obsessed with emails, and then Podesta's emails begin to drive all this negative story about me. I think it came together to really kind of make some people queasy, no doubt about that. Like, oh my gosh, what if she goes to jail? No, it was more than that. And so she elaborates on how journalists were saying, what if she goes to jail? But the quote here, the worst of them was, she, Clinton saying, the worst of them was this Pizzagate story where, honest to goodness, out of whole cloth made up, they took the word pizza out of one of the John Podesta's emails and said that he and I were running a child trafficking ring in the poor little pizza parlor in Washington. Well, even though John Podesta was known to like Italian food, it was reported that he mentioned pizza 78 times and cheese another 90 or so times in those emails, raising suspicion of writing in some sort of code. But only Podesta, the people he emailed, seemed to also reply in a similar code. Let's remember here that despite the frantic backpedaling and implementation of filtering so-called fake news by the power structure, and I do have that clip by Stephen Colbert. I don't think I need to play that. I played it twice already. And they continue now. Citizen journalists continue to dig on many levels and unearth disturbing pedophile-related images, artwork, powerful associations within a pizza restaurant owner's Instagram account, and archived it before it was switched to private. The so-called poor little pizza parlor, Comet Ping Pong, is owned by James Elefantis, who was named the 49th most powerful man in Washington, D.C. And regarding what Hillary Clinton mentions as lies about the Clinton Foundation, it's important to look at what happened in Haiti, not only about the missing millions, allegedly, in donations, but the woman, Laura Silsby, she founded the New Life Children's Refuge and was arrested with 9 others at the Dominican Republic border for kidnapping 33 Haitian children in 2010. The person who acted as a legal advisor to the American missionaries arrested on child kidnapping charges in Haiti was himself facing allegations of human trafficking in El Salvador and human smuggling charges in the United States. His name is Jorge Torres Puello. His story unravels in a weird direction. He's prior military intelligence. He's not a lawyer. So it's all interesting. It's worth looking into. But Laura Silsby now works in a high-end position for an Amber Alert type organization called Alert Sense. It's a software company, and she's the vice president of marketing. Alert Sense works with federal government on FEMA's integrated public alert and warning system. It's called IPAWS. IPAWS. One of the IPAWS functions is to issue Amber Alerts during kidnapping events. There is some fox guarding the hen house issues here coming up. But listeners, we're pushed to look at evidence with an open, unbiased mind here. You know, truth is often difficult to accept. If you're interested in knowing more about the Clinton Foundation, Haiti, and child trafficking, George Webb connects some of those dots in his YouTube videos, if you have time to investigate that. There's an interesting report titled An Unholy Alliance, the Connection Between Foster Care and Human Trafficking by Michelle Lilly. 50% of children sold into trafficking in California are in foster care, are foster care children, she writes. 98% of children who are identified as survivors of sex trafficking had previous involvement with child welfare services, and many were legally in the care and custody of the state while they were being prostituted by traffickers. At least 800,000 runaway children will be lured into commercial sexual exploitation each year. And that continues. I need to give out the phone number, listeners, because I'd like to get your comments on that. We're going to open the phone lines and talk about some of these topics, specifically the rift artificially intensified between men and women. I'm interested in what you think about this? And do you have a story to share about the animus or tension between men and women post-2016 presidential election? Women, of course, are encouraged to call and share their insights about other women. That's fine, too. But listen, nobody's talking about this topic properly. You know, I barely articulated it here and added in some 1960s feminist theory and the Hillary Clinton corruption to make some minor points, but this topic is deep. So let's see what happens. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going over there?
Pretty good. Do you have a story or a comment to make about some of the information that I've been talking about here?
Yeah, comments to make on the topics that you guys are touching upon. You know, I do have a background, I guess you would say, in the media, you know, I guess you would say TV film industry. And it makes so much sense what you guys are saying about Hillary and the Clinton, you know, administration and what the things that they do. It does make a lot of sense for, you know, all the children that are mostly in foster care wind up somehow being trafficked by all these people who, you know, run all the slaves. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense what you guys are saying, that it's pretty accurate. Makes a lot of sense. And I just want to support the theories that you guys are touching upon.
I appreciate that. Do you have a story maybe to share about maybe the tension between men and women post-2016 presidential election? Did you sense any of that?
Well, stories. I do recall that there was a lot of tension between, you know, obviously male and female, and what their point of views are upon basically, you know, whether a woman should be elected, whether another Clinton should be elected. And, you know, I personally did not want another Clinton elected because they pretty much, controlled everything that has to do with the...
But would you be confronted in saying, oh, you just don't want a female president, you don't want a woman president? That was some of the issues that were coming up, and it was really driving a wedge between the gender, I noticed. And I think there's fallout that continues today.
No, I totally understand that. I mean, I would say it's a very touchy issue.
No doubt.
When it comes to a woman president. Because there are certain laws out there that when a woman is on her time of the month, that if she does certain things, whether it's violent or not, that she can have more leniency compared to a man. There's a lot of things where, you know, people would think upon, you know, hey, if she's having that time and she needs to make a presidential decision that benefits the rest of the country, now, would that be a decision that would be accepted amongst the people? You know, considering whatever her, no one ever asks, hey, are you on your time of the month? Or, hey, or what's your mood like? You know, it's a very touchy issue when a woman is there. A man is always feeling the same way regardless of what time of the month or whatever's going on. And I'm sure that as a man, you would kind of understand that slight point of view. And I'm non-biased compared to, you know, many other people. I'm just... saying my comments.
Well, appreciate those comments, listener. We're going to go to another call. Take it easy. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. So obviously we're getting into really sensitive area here, but I'm interested in what you're thinking here about some of the topics that we touched upon. The number to call, 347-335-0818. Unfortunately, we only have one line here, so I'm going to go to the next call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to say that I think I did not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
Or Donald Trump. Okay. I voted Green Party. I don't have an intellectual background, but I think that the gender issue was very definitely played out in that Trump was probably elected because of a backlash of anti-female Hillary Clinton sentiment. That she has a lot of these issues that we're talking about is clear, but I don't think it made a bit of a difference for a lot of people. Well, they weren't even aware of it. They just did not like her because she was a woman and that she was a Clinton. And they may not even have been aware of what the the real issues were in the election.
This is interesting. I was just going to say, I was looking at the anti-male sentiment on the other side, but you're pointing out the anti-female, which, yeah, that was there as well. You're right.
It was very, very definitely there. I think, you know, and I'm no intellectual or anything like that. Somebody asked me before the election, I said, I like the idea that she's a woman. I wasn't going to vote for her, only because I'm a member of the Green Party, and I don't feel that the Democratic Party or the Republican, I think they're too polarized.
What do you think
about the flip side of the same coin.
What do you think about the list of the people, intelligent, politically aware women, who knew about her background but still would have voted for her because she was a woman? That was difficult for me to understand, and I'm curious about what you and other listeners would comment about that specifically.
Well, I can understand it. I look at it like they looked at it as a much lesser evil than what actually wound up in New York in the presidency, you know. And they were willing to overlook that because, you know, Donald Trump, quite frankly, is a pretty scary character.
Thank you very much, listener. I appreciate your comments.
All right. Okay.
Appreciate it. Have a good night. Bye. Just touching upon some sensitive issues here, specifically with the gender bias issues and the institutions that create division among gender. We're going to go to the next call. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello?
Tom.
Yeah.
From the Bronx.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Yeah, I'd like to say this, that Hillary Clinton was a very poor candidate, for one. For another, she lost the endorsement of the Women and Children's Society of Benghazi, Libya. That's a little sarcasm.
No, you're right. I didn't even get into this, you know. So what do you think about intelligent women who are making a decision to vote for Hillary Clinton, and they're politically aware, but they knew the risks involved, and they continued to vote for her anyway?
I think it was a lot of hogwash. Listen, she's just a poor candidate, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, Tom, you want to add anything else to that?
Donald Trump appealed to a certain individual. In other words, he was trying to promote originally the way people thought was a little sanity. In other words, you just can't have people waltz over the border willy-nilly. It has to go through a process. But I think that I'll just say one thing about Donald Trump. To me, he's our Lawrence of Arabia. He rode the planes. He got the Führer of the masses, but now he's being victimized by the political establishment. He's going the way of Lawrence of Arabia.
Have a good evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Tom from the Bronx. Appreciate that. It's been a long time since I've talked with him on the air. The number to call is 347-335-0818. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think it's all about attitude. Excuse me. Donald Trump, well, let's put it Hillary first. I'll do Donald Trump. Donald Trump seemed more like common sense attitude. Jobs have been flying out of this country since Ronald Reagan was president, and Ronald Reagan didn't do anything about it. 45,000, 75,000, 100,000, and he wouldn't do anything about it. So what's been happening since then? Man, woman, doesn't make no sense. Who's the president? Hillary Clinton and them represented a laissez-faire attitude of, like, the economic situation here. While they were charting off all this global stuff all around the world, and everything's, like, grand and, you know, whatever.
Right. They certainly put a veneer on it. And I would add in that Donald Trump has some serious non-politically correct language, and I think it's needed right now to, you know, kind of expose some of the problems in the democratic process. So we'll see what happens with that. But you can guarantee that that non-PC language would not have been going on with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I know. If you check him on Oprah's show, he was on Oprah at, like, in the 80s, and it was a completely different person. He was calmer. He didn't have fly off the handle, none of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And even she was saying, have you ever considered, running for office?
Mm.
And he said, no. He figures there's a lot of qualified people out there. He said the only way he would ever think about doing it was if there were no qualified out there that stepped up and were going to do it, and the country really needed it. But other than that, he said, no, I'm not interested in looking to do that, because there are plenty of other qualified people out there. And apparently, none of them stepped up. You know, you remember what they did to H. Ross Perot. And he had charts and everything telling them the country, they're sending it down the tubes, you know, and they still didn't believe him, you know. So I guess they say you get what you ask for. But anyway,
I was going to ask you what you think about intelligent, politically aware women voting for Hillary Clinton, knowing that, she only because she was a woman, but knowing her background.
Yeah, I understand that. That same question came up with our last president. You know, it's like if you're really in a situation, it's like being stuck in a bucket of water and facing drowning. You have to look at whatever hand will pull you out of that water. That's all you're going to be thinking about. You're not going to be thinking about what color is the hand. Is the hand have a soft hand? Does it have a rough hand? Does it smell nice? All this, you're going to think of that water's going in down your throat, and all you know is something is pulling you up out of that water. That's all you're dealing with. You know, the rest can come later. But to sit up there and sit back and say, no, wait a minute, let me look at this hand for a minute. Does that look like a delicate hand? Does that look like it's an unpolished hand?
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'll have to stay and wait for another opportunity and sit there and drown like a fool, you know. Well, I shouldn't use such rough language. But anyway, you know, that's all I'm saying. A man, woman, I could care less. If she had been somebody, if Eleanor Roosevelt, I'd have said, yeah, you know, because she had a brain. He said she had more brain than her husband, you know, but she didn't get that kind of exposure because it was a different term.
I wonder about the divisions between men and women right now being exploited by the loss of Hillary Clinton's election bid and just that chill that continues to be exploited by various institutions. I think Hillary Clinton is jumping on that train right now, as well as mainstream media outlets. But, listener, I really appreciate your comments and analogies.
Yeah.
They're valuable. Thank you.
It's the headlines. They want headlines. That's all. Probably most of America's not even thinking about that. They're getting that pumped into them so they can keep the agenda up.
We got some serious corrosion going on, and it's got to stop.
Yeah.
It's got to stop.
Yeah. All right, then. Thank you very much, and you have a nice night.
Okay. Thanks. Good night.
Yeah.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I heard just part of your show. I heard you mention something about Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. What part of the show?
Election.
Do you need a summary?
Not really. I'm calling from the North Bronx, and you said something about women that voted for Hillary.
One of the questions was, what do you think about politically aware, intelligent women voting for Hillary Clinton just because she's a woman?
Oh, what do I think about that?
Yeah, what do you think about that specifically? And then what about the fallout now between men and women, the fallout, the animus between men and women being fomented by institutions as we're almost a year into the Trump presidency?
Well, first of all, I think women, that if they voted for Clinton, it wasn't because she's a woman. One of the things I'm interested in, I'm Haitian American, so I definitely don't like Clinton. But I also...
Let's stop there for a minute. You're referencing the 2010 earthquake relief in the Clinton Foundation.
I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
What I'm saying is I wasn't for Trump. I wasn't for Clinton,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't for Trump either.
Okay.
So not being for Clinton didn't mean I was for Trump. So women are more sophisticated than that, you know. But I felt like I'd be forced to vote for Clinton because I can't rightfully vote for a man that on TV talks about women the way he did. And when you have children that are being raised and they have to hear a so-called leader of this country talking about grabbing women's private parts,
right?
I couldn't bring myself to vote for him either. And he still continues to talk profanity willy-nilly in front of about he's not. I have second graders that I've taught.
Okay,
that I'm more mature than him.
Okay, so it's
but,
the
so
lesser
I thought
of
there was
two.
Neither candidate was good for this country. Hmm?
Oh, I got you. I was going to say lesser of two evils, but neither candidate. You're saying
neither candidate was good. I felt like I had no choice. Not for me, at least. I know Hillary's stories, her history with Haiti, all the money that was collected, and you know, a few homes built. I've been to Haiti before the quake and after the quake. And from what I'm hearing, that she collected millions and billions, and not much was done, which I believe that's probably true.
Yeah, there
so,
was even
rightfully, I couldn't bring myself to vote for her, and I'm a woman, but I'm not going to vote for her because she's a woman.
I see.
I look at the record.
Mm-hmm. I no, that's really interesting.
I voted for her because I didn't want. I think Trump was worse.
Oh, you did vote for her.
I don't even remember what I did because
that's okay. You don't
I'm
have
so
to
mad.
Say.
I'm so mad about this election. I know I didn't vote for Trump. I know I didn't vote for Trump.
Are you mad at men?
I'm more sophisticated than that.
I got you. Okay.
I'm more sophisticated than that. You don't really realize. First of all, I'm a lot more sophisticated than that. I look at the candidate's deeds. I don't look at their gender. A woman can run this country is just as good as a man can. And for that last call, I'll talk about that time of the month. When you're 40, 50 years old, you're not worried about that time of the month anymore anyway.
I didn't want to go into all that. I know.
But I'm just saying, I'm 55. Yeah. I don't have those issues, and I worked when I had that so-called time of month. I ran an organization. I supervised 100 people when I was 27 years old. That didn't interfere with me being able to do my job. If anything, I was on point. Women's biological clock does not affect the work you do in a negative way. So whoever thinks that way in these days and times, I'm surprised they're thinking that way. But he needs to get his head out of the closet or the sand, wherever they were. Because talking about a woman's time in a month and how they can't make decisions, that's bullcrap. Because most of the callers I listened to, the last four callers, sound very unintelligent. You know, they didn't sound like intelligent people. They didn't have much education or...
Oh, well, okay, look, to their defense, some of the callers were like...
There's not even education.
Wait, somebody said...
Time in a month.
Hold on a second. Somebody said, mm-hmm. I'm not an intellectual, but this is what I did. So they're just honest. Mm-hmm. They're just talking about
oh,
what
yeah,
they
that's
did.
It. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't
want to
judge
that.
People saying they're not intelligent, because
right.
intelligent takes many forms here. So
I mean, I've met intelligent men I've worked with that have degrees that feel that the way that person did about... When I became a supervisor, they're 50 years old and I'm 27, them thinking I'm not up for the job. And they were so-called intelligent men. So education sometimes has nothing to do with it. Maybe their upbringing or their personal opinion or
you got
how
that
they
right.
regard women or how they brought up or how their father treated their mother. Because to me, Trump's father treated his mother, I won't say badly, but she was sort of like not part of the furniture. Reading about his background, Trump is the law of acquisition. That's what he was taught. Everything is the deal, the art of the deal. Women were like a backseat. Women were there, okay, have the babies, but they didn't have a voice. That's how Trump's father treated his mother. So this is why Trump is the way he is.
Right. We know everyone.
A child repeats what they see growing up.
Right. Everyone. Everyone knows this. What I was interested in.
Oh, I don't know if everyone knows this. I'm learning about him.
I'm sure a lot of listeners know this already. But
no, I didn't know this because I didn't care about Trump.
But
until
point.
He started running.
What I was interested in is getting an idea of the rift and divisions between gender. I think that I know there's so many other issues, but I noticed this as well. And you pointed out you're more sophisticated than this, and you see.
No, it's not. I don't know where you're picking up and what circles you're talking about.
Well,
gender.
Well, no. You always heard. You heard part of the show, and I went through some of it in the beginning. But I appreciate your phone call.
I've been curious. In what circle do you find there's a rift in gender that you're talking about? What what atmosphere you're talking about and what point of view you're talking about.
Well, you know, and, right after, there were reports, you know, within households of, like, couples not speaking to each other. And women,
okay.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. That went on and on.
Families that went through that.
Yeah, but I think
the
residue is still here, and I think there's something going on here. And then Hillary Clinton's coming back, and she's talking about how women are disrespecting themselves by supporting Trump right now after what, you know, they know what he's says about women. It's a complicated issue, and I was just curious about there's not enough time. There's not enough time to cover this, and I'm
Let
so
me
glad.
Just say real quick,
go
that,
ahead.
In households, there's risk because of the election, and it's not just a man or woman candidate. It's more complicated than that. I know people, friends of mine growing up, that I didn't think would vote for Trump, and they did. And even their own families, brother, sister, husband, wife, they disagreed on who to vote for. Or one voted for Trump, and they don't like the fact that they voted for Trump. Some husbands wanted to force the wife to vote for Trump. There was something on TV the other day that went around the countryside in Michigan, I think it was, or Milwaukee. And they were talking about how a wife and her husband, her dad's an older gentleman, and he stopped speaking to her because she wouldn't vote for Trump. So the riff is more sophisticated than just that as well.
Oh, it certainly is.
I'm a Haitian American, college educated, worked for New York State government for 31 years, and there is intelligent life out here in the Bronx.
Nobody doubts that for one bit, and I thank you for your call. I appreciate the insights as well.
Thank you for listening.
You bet. Good night. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me next Monday, 11 p.m. Although I think we're going into fundraising, visit inothernewsradio.com. If you want to reach me through email you didn't get through, you can reach me through inothernewsradio@yahoo.com. I can't get to your call, listener. I appreciate those phone calls. I really do. We got to get going. Coming up next is Night Shift.